Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, people out there, Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. I'm going to make a quick comment, and we're going to bring our next guest on. Once again, we will not be on the, we will not be live next week. Oh, Sam's going to be out for his big, huge family wedding. They have to take everybody because, you know, when you have a family wedding, the family goes. So we will be off. We'll be on the air next week. We're playing one of our favorite archives. So tune in. Tune in to our archives next week. We kind of need a break anyway ourselves. Listen, guess what we're going to do tonight, people. Today, as we said earlier, is the 23rd of November in the year of our Lord 2019. Yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, was the 46th anniversary of the John Fitzgerald Kennedy assassination. And that's a lot of you young people say, who? You know, 46 years ago seems like nothing to y'all. I mean, it seems like an eternity to y'all. I was sitting in study hall, and I think the ninth grade at Longview Junior High, right before we went to the New South Side. And they announced it over the intercom. And, you know, people were going crazy. The teachers were crying. The girls were crying. Some of the people were cheering because he wasn't popular in the South, you know, for his integration policies. But I was a young guy. He was one of the younger presidents we've had. And he did, in my opinion, he tried to bust up the CIA. He said he's going to bust up the CIA into 1,000 parts. But anyway, I've always wanted to do, for years and years and years since I've been to radio, I've always wanted to do a special on the JFK assassination. Well, as you know, I have two co-hosts. One is a lot younger than me. He's 34. And we have another one in here, Lee. And, you know, I don't want to be a tyrant. I'm going to let my gift to them, I'm going to let them drive the show. Our next guest, people, is none other than Pat Shannon. He has his own website, his own thing. It's called INI, Independent News International, a great website. Matter of fact, my co-host in the studio with me now, Lee Cochran, said it was a fantastic website. He is an expert. We had him on. He did a marvelous job in the Oklahoma City Federal Building demolition explosion that the government knocked it down. He did a great job on that. Now he's coming in tonight. One of his other areas of expertise is JFK assassination. And he, matter of fact, he's written a whole book and then on the thing. It's called, the name of the book is The JFK Assassination and the Uncensored Story of the Two Oswalds. Now, Lee and Matt and Pat, y'all take it away. How do you do there, Pat? I want to thank you so much for coming in tonight, fella. Pat, you there, fella? Well, I'm sure Sam will get Pat back up in just a minute. It'd be no big deal. Anyway, okay. Anyway, people, while we're still while we're trying to get Pat Shannon up, I'm just going to tell you how emotional it is to me. Like I say, I lived through the JFK assassination. I was in school when it happened. I was also in school when, with his son, Robert Kennedy, when they sent the troops into Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and they integrated the University of Alabama at the point of bayonets. People in the South, a lot of people said he was hated, but I noticed every time he did come to the South, he was treated, you know, graciously. And all of his advisors advised him not to go to Dallas, Texas, because they feared for his life. Well, when he got to Dallas, the people were just, you would think the second coming of John the Baptist was there. They just loved him. They showered him with gifts and, you know, it's adulation. And the women wanted to hug him. The men wanted to shake his hands. He was evident. He was loved. I mean, in those days, no matter, he was a Democrat. He's considered a liberal Democrat in his days. He was a Catholic. His whole family was Catholic, came over from Ireland. His dad was a John F. Kennedy's dad, Joe Kennedy, was he was an ambassador to England back prior to World War II. He was accused of being a Nazi sympathizer. I know when the, you know, when the Kennedys, especially Robert Kennedy, the little pit bull, he was the attorney general. His brother was the president. He was the attorney general, and they had this big war with Jimmy Hoffa, because Jimmy Hoffa was the leader of the. Okay, let's go. Jimmy Hoffa was the leader of the Teamsters Union. And a lot of people say that maybe the Teamsters were in on having him assassinated. But now we have Pat Shannon up here. Well, like we were telling you, Pat Shannon, he did the Oklahoma City bombing for us, you know, Murrah Trade Center. He's bombing. He's also an expert on the JFK assassination. Like I told y'all people, he wrote a book. He's an authoritative book on it called The JFK Assassination and the Uncensored Story of the Two Oswalds. How you doing tonight, Pat?
Hey, all right, Eddie. You been out of trouble?
I tell you, my man, trying big time. It is so hard for the Big E to stay out of trouble, man. I'm not kidding. I'm so excited to have you on tonight. You did a marvelous job. We had you on. I don't remember when it was, but we had you on, and you did the Murrah Federal Building bombing here on Blood River Radio. And you did a tremendous job. I love that. I studied my butt off for that. Two of my guys tonight, Pat, they're going to be doing, you know, I don't want to be a tyrant. You know, they're such good guys. Lee's chomping at the bit. He's like a JFK student. Matt's the younger guy. But we got two guys foaming at the mouth to talk to you tonight, Pat. But
sure.
I've introduced you a little bit, but go ahead and introduce yourself some more.
Well, probably the reason that I appear to know a little bit more about the Oklahoma City bombing and the cover-up is because I covered the story. I was out there six times that summer back in 95. And, of course, we did the hour-and-a-half video as well on what the called the OKC bombing, forerunner to 911. But few people know that situation was another inside job. That was a false flag pulled off by the United States government. And just as the JFK assassination was a palace coup. So the JFK thing's been solved for 30 or 40 years, but the U.S. government can never admit to some of their crimes, and or many of their crimes. And, of course, the Murrah Building is one, JFK is another, and 911 is another. These are and the most current one, of course, is the railroading of Jim Fetzer and the Sandy Hoax deal with the school. It's outrageous what they can get away with because they own the media, and they can cover up anything they need to cover up.
What do you think about that, Matt?
Well, Pat, I'm proud to have you on the show. You know, I think you're right. There's been a series of things. They've initially been allowed to get steamrolled, and initially, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Things have allowed to go swept under the rug and not checked, and it's gotten worse. And they've almost progressively gotten worse through the years. Even like you said, culminating in 9/11, which was a big deal for me for waking up. But the Kennedy assassination, this was kind of a.
Oh, man. Hey, hold on to your fire, folks. We're going to the music, and we'll be right back. And when we come back after this break, we'll bring us back. I'll chip in my 2 cents worth. We'll go right back to Matt and then Lee and then our illustrious guest, Pat Shannon, because he is the expert. Be right back, folks. Hang on to your seats.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused border agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. DefendAPatriot.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I ask you, what is the KQ? You know, the kosher question. Most Americans will spend their entire lifetime purchasing food from the supermarkets while having no idea that almost every packaged food product on the grocery shelves is certified kosher. Indeed, the kosher question encompasses not only food and religion, but also affects our economics, politics, and our identity. In an effort to promote awareness to the kosher question, developers have published an app for your smartphone that features a database of food products that have not been kosher certified. The Kosher-tified app has prominent advertisement on TPC's homepage, or you can check out its website at thekosherquestion.com. With the cesspool of politics getting even deeper these days, why not leave the swamp and start eating in favor of your own interests? Check out thekosherquestion.com today and download the app.
Your call is being transferred to the listening ear. Listening professionals dedicated to hearing you.
Hello, listening ear. Who am I listening to?
Carrie, but I was calling my mom.
Yes, you were, but your mom was so busy she felt it was important for you to have someone who could completely focus on listening to you and you alone. So she subscribed to our service. Go ahead, I'm listening.
Well, I'm not quite sure.
Where to start? Well, I can listen to school issues like science projects. I can listen to boy problems, although that's an extra $3 per call because of the emotional drain on me. How about we start with how you wish you had made cheerleader?
I didn't try out for cheerleader.
This isn't Mary?
Carrie. I'm Carrie.
Oh, sorry.
There is no substitute for a loving parent. And when you really listen, love is what they'll hear. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, for more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Well, people, we're right back. And like I told you before the break, we have Pat Shannon from Independent News International, got his own website. He's going to talk about the JFK assassination. But before we go there, I'm just going to throw a few things out that our guys can throw a bone out there they can chew on and Pat can chew on. Now, I lived through the JFK assassination, as Pat probably did. But he had no shortage of enemies. They had this thing going on called, he got tangled up in the Bay of Pigs, an operation that the CIA, the intelligence officers were against his will, again, without his knowledge, looking into the invasion of Cuba. They tried every way to sundown to kill Castro. They failed. The CIA looked at him as a thorn in their side because he was against them. The Bay of Pigs. They blamed JFK for a lot of our military people getting mowed down. They tried to do this little hodgepodge invasion of Cuba. It flunked out. It didn't go. Also, JFK did not want us to expand the war in Vietnam, the war that I was involved in. He did not want that war to expand. If they hadn't assassinated him, I probably would never had to go on. So they hated him for that. They absolutely, the secret, the cabal, the deep state, they hated him because the Bay of Pigs considered it his fault. They considered his fault because they thought he wanted to pull us out of Vietnam. Another thing he did, he made a speech talking about secret societies. By the way, people, I'm just throwing this out for y'all to talk about secret societies, and he was talking about the Federal Reserve, the Illuminati. Matter of fact, he issued a silver certificates. He put them he had an audit done, a Federal Reserve silver notes and the United States Treasury silver. He found out how much silver we had. He was issuing silver certificates there. Another thing that they hated him for was he was integrating in the South all over. And listen, this is what I believe. LBJ, J. Edgar Hoover, and Richard Nixon are just some of the people. And also, Pappy Bush. Those are some of the people who are in on having him assassinated. Now, those are some bones. Matt, we were going back to you. Go ahead and take off and ask.
Well,
take some of those bones and ask Pat.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the JFK assassination was it was put on public display. And I was going to ask Pat, let's just get to the basics. there's many ways deep state can kill people. Why would they do it on public display like that?
To show who's boss. That one went out as the warning to the next president and all of them that followed, that you ain't in charge, boy, we are. And it worked.
I'll second that.
Yeah, it worked until Reagan came along. Reagan thought he was president for 9 weeks, and he found out he wasn't.
Yeah, okay. I'm afraid they're doing it to Trump, too.
Well, they've certainly tried. In fact, the latest one apparently just happened this week when Trump went in allegedly for a doctor's exam, but what he was doing was to be sure that he hadn't been poisoned, because another one of his food tasters, and just like the Secret Service agent in Scotland a year ago, you may not be aware of, because it was very suppressed on the totally suppressed on the mainstream news. But when Reagan was in Europe and in Scotland a year ago, or a year and a half, I forget now, sometime in 18. That one of his Secret Service agents, who was testing the cologne in the bathroom and sniffed it, got deathly ill and taken to the hospital, and he actually died there the next morning. And only part on we saw on the mainstream news was Trump expressing his condolences to the family and attending the funeral, but it was not ever reported as an attempt on Trump's life. And apparently there has been another one now just this past week with this food taster. So, indeed, they are after him. But, you know, my wife and I have talked about this in the past. It's almost like Trump is divinely protected, because those guys don't miss this many times. They don't miss.
Well, I sure hope so.
George Wallace, Arthur Bremer had a 5-shot. Model 36 Smith & Wesson 38 revolver, a little what I used to call the Dick Tracy type. Dick Tracy's probably too old for you guys, but it was a snub-nosed revolver, shot 5 times. Well, Wallace had 4 shots in the trunk of his body, miraculously survived, and there was a female campaign worker shot in the leg. There was a Secret Service agent shot through the throat, and there was Wallace's police captain from Highway Patrol, Alabama Highway Patrol. It was his personal bodyguard that was shot in the abdomen and nearly died. Well, we got 4 in Wallace and 3 others. That's 7 shots coming out of a 5-shot revolver. They always have a backup.
Well, in that line, did JFK, was there an attempt on his life before that fateful day?
Not that I know of. This one was being set up for a long, long time, and I back in as early as 1961, there was Mack Wallace. I'm sorry, Lyndon Johnson's hitman involved in 5 other murders was named Malcolm Wallace, and was apparently assessing the hitman on LBJ's sister. He actually had his own sister killed because she had such a big mouth. But Malcolm Wallace was his fingerprint that was found in the sniper's hideout, allegedly on the boxes up there in the southeast corner of the school book depository. But that was suppressed for many, many years. But it had like 34 counts of points of identification, in which the examiners called a slam dunk. I think anything more than 14 is a slam dunk. So we know Malcolm Wallace was up there on the 6th floor, but we know neither Oswald was, and that's what my book is about, is the how they set it up for a long, long time with the two Oswalds. And well, let me back up. In 1966, I first read a book called The Second Oswald. And it was written by a San Diego State University professor. He was an investigator. And by the way, none of us knew anything about the truth, because we had only one source, and that was the controlled news media. Until private investigators got on the scene, like Mark Lane, a lawyer from Maryland, and others that began to turn up witnesses and begin to smell a rat over and over and over. And by 1966, professor named Richard Popkin came out with a book called The Second Oswald, and he didn't have a lot of answers either, but he had studied the Warren Omission Report, as I call it, and from page to page, and all 800 plus pages of it, it had come up with a bunch of great questions and realized that there were two Oswalds operating. In 1961, for instance, there was a man identifying himself as Lee Harvey Oswald was went into a car dealership and was test driving a new car and zooming up and down Stemmons Freeway at 80, 90 miles an hour and drawing attention to himself and saying, "My name's Lee Harvey Oswald. I'm going to be coming into some money soon, and I'm going to come back and buy this car from you." Well, that was in 1961. Two great discrepancies there. Number one, the Lee Harvey Oswald that the world later knew never drove and never held a driver's license, never learned how to drive. And number two, he'd been in Russia since 59. He didn't return until 62, so he wasn't even in the United States in 1960. The things that concerned us. And one of the most significant, the most outstanding to me was, how can a 17-year-old high school dropout from the city of New Orleans, of all places, one of the most distinguishable American accents, and he joins the Marines, allegedly goes to language school in Japan for 6 weeks, which we found out was not true either, it was a cover story, but comes out speaking Russian so fluently that when he moves to Russia and meets Marina, he speaks the language so fluently that she thinks he's a native.
Well, that's pretty dadgum good. I wish I could do that. You know, people, we're going to a break right now. Hear the music, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes, people. So hold on to your seat. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
Documents just released show Donald Trump's personal lawyer Rudy Giuliani was in contact with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in the months before the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine was abruptly recalled. The State Department released the documents to the group American Oversight in response to a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. They show that Pompeo talked with Giuliani numerous times on March 26th and March 29th. Austin Evers, executive director of American Oversight, said the documents reveal a clear paper trail from Rudy Giuliani to the Oval Office to Secretary Pompeo to facilitate Giuliani's smear campaign against a U.S. ambassador. Last week, former Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch told House impeachment investigators she felt kneecapped by a smear campaign that Giuliani led against her. She was withdrawn from her post in the Ukraine in May. This is USA Radio News.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
President Trump heard opposing viewpoints in the debate over youth vaping, but offered no insight into where he would ultimately come down on the issue after promising 2 months ago he would ban e-flavored cigarettes, but then backtrack. He said the administration would announce their plan very soon. Trump told reporters, "We want to take care of our kids. We've got to take care of our kids." After listening to more than an hour of, at times, robust debate among representatives from the vaping industry, the nation's major health associations, parent advocates, and business groups. And in other news regarding vaping around the United States, Massachusetts lawmakers passed a groundbreaking ban on the sale of flavored tobacco and vaping products, including menthol cigarettes. The bill would also place a 75% excise tax on vaping products and require health insurers, including the state's Medicaid program, to cover tobacco cessation counseling. We appreciate you listening as you get ready for the holidays here at USA Radio News.
my day.
Hello, people. We were right back, and we're getting ready to wave my other co-host in because I sure want them to be in on this because this is we've been waiting to do this interview for a long time. But I would just like to throw a question out there. Speaking of Oswald being from New Orleans, is it true that when they found Oswald, that he had a little black book in his possession that had Pappy Bush's phone number in there in his possession? And there was also another FBI agent. God, I wish I could remember his name, because I read a book called Farewell to Justice. It was almost too big for me, about 460 pages. It talked about all this stuff. But in summary, supposedly the black book in Oswald's possession had Pappy Bush's phone number in it, had the FBI agent's phone number in it. At the same time, Pat talked about this one dude was trying to make a big show. Hey, I'm Lee Harvey Oswald. He's driving crazy up and down the road. He had this thing called Fair Play for Cuba going on down in New Orleans, making a big sign, causing disturbances, carrying signs, saying, hey, I'm a patriot. I want to help Cuba's getting a raw deal, et cetera, et cetera. But Pat, do you know anything about that? Was that information was those two phone numbers in his possession? And one more question, is it true that Pappy Bush, when he was asked where he was during the assassination of JFK, he said he couldn't remember? Go ahead, right. Go ahead, Pat.
Well, first of all, you say were these phone numbers in Oswald's possession? Which Oswald? Which one are you talking about?
That's right. That's right. That's also, hey. Oh, this is a hula hoop.
That's the point of my whole book. Realizing some of these things that I described, I learned from Popkin in 1966. I did a little research. I wasn't even writing yet, but Jim Mars was already writing about the possibility of two, and so was Bob Groden. And back in the 80s, and Groden did a whole book on the two Oswalds, but none of us could really nail it down until a guy by the name of John Armstrong came along in the 90s, and he wrote an epic 1,000-page heck, it's far more than a book. It's an encyclopedia, practically. And he named it Harvey and Lee. And
who's that now,
really,
Pat?
Way of helping the reader distinguish, because these two guys did look so much alike. And they were actually brought together a good 10 years before the assassination. They were teenagers in 1953. And apparently, Harvey, who was the only one the world public ever knew, Harvey was the one that was framed for the assassination and murdered by Jack Ruby. But Harvey apparently was a war orphan. He probably had grown up with Russian parents and spoke Russian fluently in the household, and maybe was orphaned, somehow ends up in New York, and is discovered by somebody. Don't forget now, we're at the height of the Cold War in the 50s. And somebody of authority, FBI or elsewhere, begins to realize, wow, what an asset in the Cold War, a Russian-speaking teenager. We got to have him. And so somehow he probably was adopted by the woman that we knew later as Marguerite Oswald. Now, there's some real problems with her also, and I'll get to it. But when somebody sees this kid and hears him speak fluent Russian, realizing what an asset this could be, they may have put out a picture of him to the FBI offices around the country. Not sure how they were brought together. Jim Mars used to speculate that Robert Oswald, Lee was born October the 18th, 1939 in New Orleans. He's the one that dropped out of high school in 56 and joined the Marines and went to Japan. But Harvey was still back in New Orleans. They had been brought together in New York somehow, and then they began to move them together. They actually went to the same junior high school in Beauregard Junior High in New Orleans at the same time in different grades. So it's remarkable. And they looked in adulthood almost like twins. As kids, they did not, because Lee was bigger, taller, heavier, muscular. Lee was, when he got in the Marines, was a beer-drinking brawler, liked to fight. And Harvey was an intellect. And he was shorter, he was skinnier. And we can see that by the pictures there in my book. But the two were brought together. But the significant thing that made Harvey set aside was he didn't go to the Marines until 1958. In fact, on October the 4th, 1957, was a famous date in history that you guys, it came along before you guys did, but that was the Sputnik, the launching of the Sputnik by Russia. It was a big, big deal.
Right.
And a guy by the name of Palmer McBride was Harvey's closest friend. They even called him Harvey. He never went by Lee. He went by Harvey. And Palmer McBride remembered being tracked down by John Armstrong. They remembered that they had talked together and intellectualized together about the Sputnik launching and in his house, and it was in October 1957, a year after Lee had left New Orleans and joined the Marines. So this was a significant part to me that Armstrong brought up. Well, we all had been believing this sort of stuff, but nobody had really proved it until John Armstrong spent about 5 years in research. He was a millionaire oil man from Tulsa, could afford to travel the world and support his own investigation like most of us could not. And he came out with that giant book called Harvey and Lee in about 1999, 2000. And this is why I say that my book, which is the Reader's Digest of his, gives him full credit for proving everything that we had suspected for 30 or 40 years. And mine is like 160 or 70 pages of a Reader's Digest version of John Armstrong's great, great work, plus coupled with mine, because I'd been on top of it for a long, long time as well. And I had known Madeline Duncan Brown, Lyndon Johnson's girlfriend, who gave birth to his illegitimate son in 1950. I had snooped quite a bit, but my book, it was not inspired. My book was provoked because by 2013, the 50th anniversary, when we were all in Dallas, I rushed to get that out in 2013 because I would be in Dallas for that anniversary. And I was provoked because after like 15 years of Armstrong's research being public, we still had people who were supposed to be on our side, people like Jerry Corsi and Jesse Ventura, who were writing books about all the discrepancies in the Kennedy assassination, and they still want to talk about a singular Oswald. And I didn't like that, and I still don't.
You know, Pat, you mentioned LBJ's girlfriend, Madeline Duncan Brown.
Yes.
Is it true that he told her, I think, did she admit that LBJ told her when he was speaking of JFK, when he's speaking to John Fitzgerald Kennedy, that Lyndon Baines Johnson said, "We will be rid of that SOB tomorrow, pretty soon." Did he tell her that? Did she tell an interviewer that LBJ told her that?
She told Pat Shannon that, but that's not the direct quote. The quote.
Oh, okay.
I'm not the only one. I certainly wasn't the first one, but she wrote a book called Texas in the Morning, and she got that title because LBJ was down in Austin, and they were shacking up together, and he would pulled open the drapes one morning, and the sun came up, and he said, "Hot dang, I love Texas in the morning," and he was really a despicable character, but. Madeline, strange. It was almost like a godsend the way I met Madeline. Well, we were at a conference in Dallas back in '98, and I had had a book table there, and every Sunday on weekends, all of us authors would go around and trade books with other people who had stuff we were interested in reading. I went to this large book display, and there was this elderly woman sitting there at the table by herself, and I said, "Hi, can we do some book trading?" And she says, "Well, these aren't my books. This belongs to somebody else. I'm just looking after for her while she's having lunch or something." But I do have this one book of mine. And she held it up, and she said, "I'm Madeline Duncan Brown." And I said, was Lyndon Johnson's girlfriend. I yelled right back at her because I recognized the name. And we became immediate friends, and we traded books, of course, and I was back home in Jackson, Mississippi at that time, a couple days later, and cracked the book open, and right in the early pages, she talks about the meeting at Clint Murchison's house, which I had confirmed 3 years earlier with a retired CIA colonel, Russell Bowen. But she writes about
Pat, we're
that,
going to a music. We got to go to a break. Pat, I hear the music. I'm sorry. I hate to have to interrupt you. We've got to go to, I think, our final break. We'll be right back in just a minute.
As you all know, Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only 7 countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the 9th month. It is wrong. It has to change. Americans are more and more pro-life. You see that all the time. In fact, only 12% of Americans support abortion on demand at any time. Under my administration, we will always defend the very first right in the Declaration of Independence, and that is the right to life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, people, thank you so much for holding on. That'd be our last commercial break we got to go to. Now, we're going to go right back to Pat. Pat, if you will, pick up right where you left off during that break.
What I wanted to tell you was the exact quote was that... she asked him, I think it was New Year's Eve, they were back in Austin shacking up together, and she asked him if he had anything to do with it, and he blew his stack, and he confessed there that, you know, there was the oil boys and the CIA or something. But the quote back at the Murchison house to which you are referring was that when Lyndon showed up at 10 o'clock, he had been at a banquet with JFK and the thing and all the gang in Fort Worth and zoomed over in the limousine. and showed up at the Murchison meeting where George Bush was and Richard Nixon and J. Edgar Hoover and many others, the big wigs from D.C. And he came, she wasn't expecting to see him, but he came in, and at that time they adjourned the party and went into the conference room. The big wigs did. She, of course, did not. And she was sitting at the bar and sipping a drink. And Lyndon, when the meeting was over, Lyndon came out, and he was fuming. And he said to her, "Mark my words, after tomorrow, those blankety-blank Kennedys will never embarrass me again."
That's the quote that I had heard. I'm glad you reiterated that. I'm glad you backed it up, because I've read that and heard about that. You know, before I go to the next question, I'm just going to say, I'm going to name these people. I want people to listen. LBJ, President of the United States. J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the infamous FBI, who had, J. Edgar Hoover had tapes on everybody and his mama in Hollywood and the government. He had the goods. He had the recordings of JFK, JFK's brother Robert Kennedy. He had tapes on everybody. There wasn't a politician in the United States that was not fearful of J. Edgar Hoover blackmailing them with all these tapes.
That's correct.
Also, with President Nixon there, Pappy Bush, who was the head of the CIA, I think the Hunt brothers of Texas, the millionaire or billionaire, all boys, Sip Dealey and Silver. Can you imagine this collection?
Not the brothers, Daddy, H.L. Hunt.
Oh, H.L. Hunt. Can you imagine, Pat and all the other people, the power, that group of people, that much power represented in one room, they're in on together to get rid of JFK. Pat, before we go to the next other questions, were they acting on their own, or were they acting just on their own? Were they taking orders from a higher group, for instance, like the Mossad, our brothers in Israel? Were they doing that on their own? And if they were, why were they doing it? Why did they hate him so bad, Pat?
Well, there are about a half a dozen different motives. You touched on them at the beginning of this interview of reasons to get rid of JFK. I sided with Jim Garrison, the New Orleans district attorney who tried to bring a case later in the 60s and found out that his greatest enemy, his biggest obstacle, was the U.S. government. In fact, there were the governor of Texas and a governor, I think, of another state refused to even honor his subpoenas, that when he would subpoena people in their state, they just wouldn't allow him to be served. So that's how much power was coming from above. Who was the real boss? Well, I don't know. Michael Collins Piper wrote a great book implicating the Mossad in Israel, mm-hmm. and David Ben-Gurion, possibly. But the motive, the final straw that broke the camel's back, in my opinion, was not the money issue, the executive order of 11110 of June the 4th, 1963, of the silver certificate that you mentioned. That had nothing to do with Federal Reserve notes. And that was that might have been a step in the wrong direction, but I don't think it was the real motive. But I believe the straw that broke the camel's back was at the end of September of 63, Kennedy announced that he was bringing home 1,000 advisors. They called them advisors back then, and it was CIA agents, yeah. what they were. And he's going to bring home everybody else by the Christmas of the following year. And this is what the military-industrial complex could not stand. They had to have a war. As you well know, the banksters make billions, trillions now with wars, and this is what they had to have. And so after they got rid of Kennedy and Johnson goes in, it was in August the 4th, I believe it was, of 64 is when they faked the Gulf of Tonkin a ship attack, and which never, ever happened, and later Navy men and Air Force pilots or naval pilots, even one guy even wrote a book about how they had bogus the thing up. And Johnson's Secretary of Defense, McNamara, even, and he admitted it later, too, when he wrote a book around 2000 before he died. So I believe that was the real straw that broke Kennedy's back as far as getting killed. Was that's something that they simply had to get rid of him for. From the perspective of the New World Order, that is.
Pat, how about another thing he did, I've been led to believe, that might have got him his death certificate? He had so many enemies, like you say. There were just too many. What about JFK said that, told the head honchos in Israel, if I'm not mistaken, that they would never, ever, he would never allow them to have atomic weapons. He was going to make them shut that nuclear weapons factory down in Israel. Do you know anything about that, Pat?
Yes. Not much more than you do, but that indeed is a fact, that that would have been a motivation for Israel to become involved.
You know, I heard that, and, you know, we all know, I say we all do, at least I do, and everybody in my staff, I mean, you know, Israel, kind of like the United States government, is kind of like a marionette. Israel pulls the strings, and our people jump, I guess, into the side of rabbit trail. It looks like that these people over here, the BRICS nations, India, China, Russia, they may be trying to put an end to that, but I don't think they're going to succeed. But let me ask you this right here. You know, I've also heard, Pat, am I right or wrong, did they change when President Kennedy got to Dallas? Like I said earlier, the people seemed like they idolized him. You know, I mean, after all, this was the day before there was as much hatred as there is now. If you were the president of the United States in those days, you got respect no matter what party you were. So when he got there, was the route, you may or may not know this, the route that JFK was supposed to go, it was not even supposed to go through Dealey Plaza, was it? Who changed the route at the last minute? Does anybody know about that?
Oh, yes, it wasn't the last minute. It was the last day or two. And you see, I'm going to turn that off. Sorry, I didn't even have my cell phone sitting here. The route indeed was changed, but it was changed by the mayor of Dallas, whose name was Cabell, C-A-B-E-L-L.
Uh-huh.
Nice name.
General Cabell.
Yeah, like the Cabell.
His brother was General.
Yeah.
Wasn't his brother General Cabell?
Was the CIA officer by the name of Charles Cabell, who was dumped by JFK. He was fired along with Alan Dulles. They were booted out, so they had a thorn in their side as well. So, but we can see the connection with the mayor of Dallas, who changed the parade route and back to the CIA in D.C.
Well, that was Al. I may jump into regression at straws. Did Alger Hiss play any part in there, or am I off base there?
Alger Hiss, the German?
Yes.
He would have been in jail then. He'd been in jail since 46 or 7, I guess, right after the Nuremberg thing.
I'm way off base there then. I'm way off. Well, another question, Pat. I hope I'm not interrupting you with a question, but it's just so fascinating to me. Like I said, I grew up during this time. Now, is it true that immediately before the shots were fired from the infamous grassy knoll the Texas Depository Book Center, did LBJ actually duck down in the box? He was riding in the back of the presidential limousine. He was in the back.
No, he was two cars back in the vice presidential limousine.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you straightened me out. Did he duck down before the shots were fired?
Right after the first one. They heard the first one, which was probably a diversionary shot anyway from the school book depository. And the first shot to hit Kennedy, it came from the front, went through the windshield, and that's what all the doctors identified, that throat wound as an entrance wound. By the time they got him to D.C., though, they had cut it up so bad it looked like an exit wound. But, yes, indeed, a couple of Secret Service agents remarked that Johnson had ducked.
Well, you know, evidently, you know, what I'm leading into, I feel like I'm doing a clumsy job. He definitely had prior knowledge of this assassination attempt, and I think he was absolutely in on it, like we mentioned before. Well, I know we're getting close to running out of time. You know, Pat, I'm just going to try to wind this up, and it's. I wish we had 2-3 hours to do on this at least. And in the end, the Warren Commission came out, which is totally full of bunk. I'm sure you'll agree to that. I think 75% of the Americans agree that it was full of bunk.
Yeah.
In the end, like you said, you think that the final straw that got him killed, and I've always thought that had a big thing to do with it too, he had his thumb in the eye of the intelligence agencies, all of them, the deep state, the bankers, but probably in the end, him pulling troops out of Vietnam was probably what got him killed. Doggone it, Pat. I hear the music. I hate that. Boy, this hour flew. Pat, well, thank you so much for coming on. Yes, sir, we certainly will, Guy. God bless you. Thank you so much, Pat, for coming on. Sam, thank you so much, Sam, for coming on tonight. And Matt, of course, thank Matt for coming on. And I wish, hey, we missed Bethany tonight. I can't say, but thank Bethany anyway. Sam, I hope you have a good time at your son's wedding. We'll all be off next week again. We'll be playing a tape, but more than likely, a lot of you people have not heard the show because most of our people listen to archives anyway, I think, what I've been told. Thank you so much, people. Thank you for coming in, Lee. Thank you, everybody. God bless you. And tune in here same time, same place next week for the archives. And tune in. We'll be back with you, let's see, live again on the 7th of December, Pearl Harbor Day. We'll have a good guest that night. Thank you so much, people. Good night.